I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. An article in the August edition of Vanity Fair investigates Mitt Romney's use of offshore and foreign tax havens in places like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda and Switzerland. President Obama's reelection team is using this story as a campaign issue, asking on its website, has Mitt Romney avoided U.S. taxes by investing millions in tax havens? A recent article in the New York Times says that Delaware, where corporations outnumber residents, is a bigger tax haven than the Caymans because of its tax-friendly laws. One street in Wilmington is the legal address for 285,000 businesses. The authors of those two articles join us on Radio Times. Nicholas Shackson wrote the Vanity Fair article, which is titled Where the Money Lives. He's the author of a book called Treasure Islands, Tax Havens and the Men Who Stole the World. He also writes the Tax Justice Network, or writes for the Tax Justice Network, and he joins us from Switzerland. And Nicholas Shackson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hello, nice to talk to you.
Also with us is Leslie Wayne. She's a contributing business reporter for the New York Times, senior editor at the investigative website 100 Reporters, wrote that article about Delaware called How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. She also teaches at NYU Graduate School of Journalism and the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. And Leslie Wayne, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to see you, Marty.
Nick, let me begin with you, and I have some sort of tax haven for dummies type questions just to get us started. To you, Nick, and you've written a book, and you also wrote this article about Mitt Romney. What is a tax haven?
Well, there's no generally agreed definition of what a tax haven is. In the popular imagination, it's a small island somewhere, and a few kind of celebrities and mafiosi might be hanging out there. But in fact, my research, as I researched my book, it became clear that the offshore system of tax havens is much, much, much bigger and much more important than almost anybody realizes. Essentially, what a tax haven is, if you drill down to the core offerings, the name, it's a little bit of a misnomer. Tax is an important part of what they offer, but it's much more fundamental than that. What they ultimately offer these places, the offshore system, what is available is escape from the responsibilities of society. You take your money elsewhere, and you're no longer bound by the rules and responsibilities that bind everybody else. And those responsibilities might be taxes, they might be financial regulations, they might be criminal laws, they might be inheritance rules, whatever. Lots of different aspects of society. So they are, and the other aspect of it is that generally, it is the wealthiest and most powerful people in any society that are able to afford the structures that happen offshore, that are created offshore. So, essentially, we see escape routes for the wealthiest sections of society, and we see, in the field of tax, for example, we see their tax rates, effective tax rates, falling as a result of using tax havens. A lot of it's not illegal, a lot of it is legal, and there's a kind of big grey area between the two. But, when the tax rates of the richest fall, then you will have everybody else kind of having to pick up the slack. My book sees it as a profoundly, tax havens, profoundly dangerous development in the global economy, a kind of great big fault line in the whole system of global capitalism.
Nick, if you don't mind, and I do want to pick up on some of the things that you just said, but I want to give Leslie Wayne a chance to weigh in on this as well. The same question, but I'm also interested because you wrote about Delaware. What's the difference between, an onshore and an offshore tax haven if we're looking at the state of Delaware?
Onshore actually means that it's a little more convenient for – there's actually not that much difference between the two. And one of the arguments that people in the Caymans and places that have been identified as tax havens have is that they have stricter rules than the state of Delaware. So, but one of the advantages of people operating in the state of Delaware is that if you want to open a bank account anywhere in the world, having a U.S. address is really a valuable item. It gives you a certain amount of credibility. And if you have a bank account that and your money is tied into the Caymans or to Jersey or to the Isle of Man, it sets up red flags. But a lot of the way in which Delaware operates is really not that much different than the way it operates overseas. And one of the reasons why a lot of attention is now coming to Delaware is because the United States has been pointing its finger at places like the Caymans, places like the Isle of Man, and of course it gets turned back on the U.S. saying, well, you know, what about what's going on right there in your backyard? And in the case of Philadelphia, what's going on literally right there in your own backyard?
And what are the tax advantages for a corporation to have its headquarters in Delaware?
There are tax advantages, and there's actually some very serious, legitimate business reasons. The tax advantage for some corporations is that it enables you to escape from state taxes elsewhere in the country, and this is the thing that's called the Delaware loophole. And for people in Pennsylvania, it's particularly interesting because it affects a lot of the Marcellus Shale companies. The Marcellus Shale companies, many of them are incorporating in Delaware to have their taxes in Pennsylvania reduced. But there's also, to Delaware's credit, there's a lot of serious business reasons why a company might set up in Delaware because of the sophistication of the business law. And so you see Apple, you see Ford Motor Company, you see General Motors, you see Walmart, you see all these companies setting up their registering and incorporating in Delaware precisely because they want to take advantage of the Delaware courts. Of course, a lot of the addresses they're using are the same addresses that are used by, you know, tax evaders and bad guys doing bad things and shady guys doing, you know, terrible things in sunny countries. So you have this mix in Delaware of legitimate businesses incorporating there for legitimate reasons, and then other reasons which are related to tax advantages and to secrecy.
And I do want to get back to you, Nick, but just one question for you, Leslie. Looking at the article that you wrote in the New York Times, you say 1209 North Orange Street, this is in Wilmington, is a legal address of no fewer than 285,000 separate businesses. We're talking about what, someone's name on a mailbox or an email address that's at that particular address?
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you look, it's the, you know, it's the gold plated companies of corporate America, along with, again, a lot of shady people, and it's basically a very nondescript office building. There's a lot of cubicles inside, and it serves the purpose that building serves is that when there's a legal, it accepts service for litigation. So when there's litigation brought against any number of companies, the 1209 North Orange accepts service for it. But there's also another address there in Delaware, 2711 Centerville Avenue, which also has over 200,000 corporations registered at that other address. But 1209 is sort of the American equivalent of Ugland House that President Obama pointed out in the Caymans. You know, saying that this has got to be, you know, either the biggest corporate headquarters or the biggest tax scam. Well, when he pointed a finger at Ugland House, a lot of people then said, you know, that you've got 1209 North Orange right there overlooking a parking lot on an average ordinary street in Delaware.
Well, Nick, let me give you a chance to respond to that, because I know you have looked at Delaware and how it compares to places like the Caymans.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I generally agree. I generally agree with that. I mean, one thing that struck me is, you know, if you peer in the windows at Ugland House in the Cayman Islands and you peer in the windows of 1209 Orange Street in Delaware, they actually look pretty similar. And what this, you know, this is cubicles. This is low-level work. This is not sort of people making top management decisions. What's happening in these places, this is shuffling of paper, really, what's happening. It's not economic substance. This is not where the real decisions are being taken. And that's one of the great kind of motifs of the whole offshore world. You take your money elsewhere. You have your real business is one place, but then you kind of incorporate somewhere else, and you're suddenly able to kind of backflip into a whole set of new rules which enable you to get away from whatever it is you don't like. And so, there, you know, I saw a lot of similarities in one of my chapters I write about the tax haven of Jersey and the tax haven of Delaware together, and the British tax haven of Jersey, and the similarities are absolutely stunning. Mm. And one of the kind of key themes that I found from talking to people in both places, what they said was the reason companies come here, one of the reasons companies come here is because you can get people around the table, you can make decisions fast, you can change the laws, you can bang laws through. There aren't lots of kind of pesky stakeholders to get in the way and slow things down, and it's very efficient. Now, that sounds great, but if you start to unpack what that actually means, you know, what is that efficiency? Who are those stakeholders? What you realize is that the people, you know, this is kind of like the smoke-filled room. This is people getting around a table. This is having effects on people who are elsewhere, but the lines of accountability between the decision-makers and the people who are affected are effectively cut. So, you know, the laws of the Cayman Islands, for example, are not designed to directly affect the people of the Cayman Islands. They are designed to target the people of the United States and Latin America and elsewhere. But there is no accountability. There's no democratic accountability. There are no stakeholders to say, hang on a minute, is this law really fair? So you have, you know, it's kind of a profoundly anti-democratic system, the whole offshore system. And I would agree very much that Delaware is part of the offshore system.
Interesting.
It is effectively an offshore tax haven inside the United States. And it's not just about taxes. Taxes are very important in Delaware state. You know, it is, as Leslie said, it is a way to escape state taxes elsewhere in the United States. And those two words again crop up, escape and elsewhere. That's, you know, she brought that up. And those two words are absolutely key. But there are other things in Delaware. There are legitimate business reasons. You know, the Delaware Chancery Court has built up a huge amount of expertise. But also there are rules in Delaware that allow managers, corporate managers and owners to treat shareholders with perhaps disdain, you might say. The relationship, it really skews the relationship between company managers and their shareholders and other stakeholders. So it's a kind of corporate governance issue that is another major reason why companies incorporate in Delaware, and they say, well, that's efficient, we just let managers do what they want. But, you know, when you start thinking about the interests of other stakeholders, you again ask the question,
sure,
well, hang on, is this really, you know, is this really what we want?
Let me pick up on that. And Leslie, even going back to you, and you talk about the fact that there are, open hours, long hours, which allows corporations to come and put their headquarters in Delaware. But just what is required of that, I guess?
What's required is very little. And that's one of the big issues that's taking place right now in Washington, one of the issues that's come up relating to Delaware and other states of the United States that are following the same path, although to a much lesser extent, is that you do not have to, when you register in Delaware, you do not have to state who is the beneficial owner of the company. Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, has been promoting legislation that has gone nowhere in Washington, requiring that corporations that are incorporating, that are registering, have to say who is the beneficial owner. Beneficial owner is the person that has economic control of the corporation. One of his longstanding complaints is that it takes more information to get a driver's license than to set up a corporation. The Secretary of State's office in Delaware is very efficient. It's very business friendly, mm-hmm, so much so that it stays open till midnight Monday through Thursday to set up corporations. It stays open till 10:30 on Friday night, and it says that you can get a corporation set up in less than an hour. So if you want to set up a corporation in Delaware from anywhere in the world, there's efficiency and there's no questions asked. And once you have that Delaware address, again, you can begin to do business anywhere else in the world.
And that's Leslie Wayne. She's a contributing business reporter for the New York Times, senior editor at the investigative website 100 Reporters. Wrote a recent article in the New York Times titled How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. Nicholas Shaxson, the author of a Vanity Fair article about Mitt Romney and his money in offshore accounts, where the money lives, wrote a book called Tax Havens. We'll be right back.
Greensgrow Farm supports WHYY. The Greensgrow Camden Mobile Markets are open Thursdays and Fridays in 8 Camden neighborhood locations. Full details at greensgrow.org/Camden.
The Wistar Institute supports WHYY-FM. I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute. The newest cancer treatments almost always start with a breakthrough in basic science research. Wistar researchers identify the causes of cancer, and this can lead to treatments that directly target the causes without the harmful side effects of older cancer therapies. Basic research saves lives and needs your support. To learn more about how you can join us and help save lives, visit wistar.org.
Announcing the 2012 WHYY Connections Festival, September 6th through 9th. 4 days of free arts and culture events, including an outdoor concert featuring Yola Tango, Frank Turner, Maps and Atlases, and more, Saturday, September 8th. And on September 9th, performances by Fred Parris and the Five Satins, Charlie Gracie, and more at the Philadelphia Doo-Wop Festival. More artists and events to come. Visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
PNC Bank and the Barnes Foundation support WHYY and welcome visitors to the Barnes in Philadelphia to view the world-renowned art collection in its new home. For information on programs, ticket availability, and to order, barnesfoundation.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. A new Vanity Fair article investigates Mitt Romney's use of offshore and foreign tax havens. It's drawing more attention to the Republican presidential candidate's finances. The author of that article is joining us from Switzerland. His name is Nicholas Shaxson. Wrote a book a year or so ago called Treasure Islands, about tax havens around the world. Also with us is Leslie Wayne, and she wrote an interesting article in the New York Times recently, How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. And we invited both of them to join us on Radio Times to help us understand the world of tax havens. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Nick, let me go back to you. How much money does Mitt Romney have in offshore tax havens?
Well, that's a little bit hard to measure. I mean, in total, he's got, it seems that he's got about $250 million US, in total, maybe a little bit less than that. Now, how much of that is in foreign tax havens? You know, a lot of the money is tied up in funds. The funds themselves are routed through tax havens, and so it's hard to get it. It is hard to put a figure on that number, I'm afraid. But it is a substantial amount of it. Bain Capital, the private equity company that he set up in 1994 and ran until he relinquished it about 15 years later, until he relinquished control of it. That has been heavily involved in setting up its funds in tax havens, like particularly the Cayman Islands, but also other places as well. So it is, you know, a lot of his wealth comes from Bain Capital, a very significant amount of it. And, you know, a lot of that is from the use, you know, has used tax havens to create this, create his wealth. So, you know, it's kind of hard to put a figure on it, I'm afraid.
Well, and Mitt Romney has said, I pay all the taxes that are legally required, not a dollar more, that what he is doing is legal. But in your article, you call him a financial acrobat. What do you mean?
Well, one of the, I guess the crux of my article, now there has been, this has been repeated many times, the Romney camp and many others have said, okay, Mitt Romney is a financial acrobat. In other words, he uses, you know, clever accounting techniques, clever tricks to skip around certain taxes and use loopholes. And there are many, many examples of that, you know, in my article and in elsewhere. So he, you know, he has been remarkably skilled at using the tax system. The tax system is incredibly complex and full of loopholes, and he's been incredibly adept at using that. But what the crux of my article really was, you know, this kind of mantra that he has never broken the law, he's paid all the taxes and not a dollar more, has been kind of basically accepted by everybody. And I decided in the article to sort of ask, you know, is that actually true? To what extent is that true? And the answer to that question isn't, you know, it's not completely clear. It's not completely straightforward. Essentially, when you look at any tax system, there are kind of two poles. At one end, you have tax evasion, which is illegal, and at the other end, you have tax avoidance, which is, by definition, not illegal, but it also, by definition, involves kind of getting around the spirit of the law. But between these two poles, the legal and the illegal, there is a kind of gray area, and because of the complexities in the tax system, this gray area is usually quite a substantial one. And then what I discovered, I think maybe the most important aspect of my article is the pattern that I found, that not just in the area of tax, but in various other areas too, Mitt Romney appears to be very comfortable striding boldly into this gray area, into this fuzzy gray zone, and doing things that, you know, if it's close to, you know, it's kind of a judgment call as to whether this is actually, you know, going too far. And usually in the gray area, you know, occasionally you will get a court case, and then, you know, you get a resolution of that court case, and you work out which side of the law someone is on after that. But more often than not, it just stays gray. And often these gray areas where you can kind of push the boundaries and really sort of change valuations of things in a very artificial way, and tax havens are often useful for that, you can make an awful lot of money pushing the boundaries like that. And Mitt Romney has made a lot of money by kind of stretching what many people would consider acceptable, and in some cases perhaps what the IRS or other institutions would consider acceptable. So it's a, you know, he is a kind of comfortable in these gray zones.
And I do want to get back to that. Let me get back to you, Leslie Wayne, because one of the things that you say in the article that you wrote about Delaware is that it's better than the Caymans, because you say eventually American companies have to bring their foreign profits to the U.S. and pay federal taxes. Delaware, I guess, operating under a different set of rules, which gets to this extremely complicated tax system that we have. And does that allow for the kind of gray area that Nicholas was just talking about?
Well, let me sort of try to cut through. Tax havens and tax law gets very, very complicated. But there's an issue that affects sort of within the states of the United States. And it'll get back to your question.
Sure.
And let me try to cut through and make it as simple as possible. When you incorporate in Delaware, when businesses incorporate in Delaware, businesses make money in a variety of different ways. They have different lines of businesses. Well, one way is that they make money through what's called intangible assets. These are through their trademarks, through licensing agreements, through a whole variety of different things. So when you incorporate in Delaware, as many of the Marcellus Shale companies are doing now, those intangible assets and the earnings from those intangible assets are not taxed in the state of Delaware. Mm. If those companies were registered in the state of Pennsylvania, the earnings from those intangible assets would be taxed, and the tax would go to that's generated would go to the state of Pennsylvania. But they incorporate in Delaware instead to escape taxes from that. Well, also they can use they can also use the same numbers to get a tax deduction in the state of Pennsylvania as well. Once that takes place, once they don't pay the taxes and they also get the benefit of using those intangible assets to get a deduction in the state of Pennsylvania, that's permanent. They have already escaped the taxes. There'll be no repatriation of those taxes. When corporations are registered in offshore locations, the earnings that they make overseas at some point have to be repatriated on the federal level, have to be repatriated back to the United States, and corporations have to pay taxes on that when that money comes back to the United States. And that's a big discussion that's taking place right now, because when corporations are based in the Caymans, and, Apple has had, there's been a lot of articles about Apple, that they've made a lot of money overseas. They've kept that money in overseas accounts. And at some point, if they want to take that money back to the United States, they're going to have to pay taxes on it. Mm. So there's a thing called the Delaware loophole, which really affects sort of between different states. But there have been some academic studies that have said that the states have been deprived of over $9 billion through the Delaware loophole. And one of the companies that took tremendous advantage of the Delaware loophole was WorldCom, which had an intangible asset called management foresight that enabled them to escape billions of dollars of taxes elsewhere. And the irony is that this is a company that fell into bankruptcy because of poor management, and the intangible asset that they were using to escape taxes was something called management foresight.
Well, and I'm thinking of that, tough times around the world, and certainly state governments are trying to figure out how to balance budgets and where to make cuts. So this Delaware loophole has a big impact on states. I know it has a big impact here in Pennsylvania, Leslie.
Well, and so far there's a study that was done in Pennsylvania that about $400 million annually in lost revenue took place in the state of Pennsylvania as a result of corporations incorporating in Delaware, and that was before the whole Marcellus shale boom. And more than 400 corporate subsidiaries of Marcellus shale companies that operate in Pennsylvania are registered in Delaware. But the yin and the yang of it taking place within the state legislature in Harrisburg is that on one hand you have the state wanting to raise more revenues and get more taxes, and the other side you have the business community, mm-hmm. which is saying that they don't want to pay more taxes, and they claim that if you want to have a business friendly state in Pennsylvania, you have to keep this you have to keep companies allow them to register in Delaware for these purposes. So that's what's taking place. And there's legislation that's gone through the House in Harrisburg to begin to clamp down on this loophole. But it's a big fight taking place in Harrisburg.
Indeed it is. And that's Leslie Wang, contributing business writer for the New York Times, senior editor at the investigative website 100 Reporters. And we're talking about a recent article she had in the Times titled How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. Also talking with Nicholas Shaxson. He's joining us from Switzerland, where he lives. Wrote a Vanity Fair article about Mitt Romney and his use of tax havens, the article called Where the Money Lives. He's also the author of a book called Treasure Islands, Tax Havens and the Men Who Stole the World. He writes for the Tax Justice Network. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I'm kind of toggling back and forth between the two of you. Nick, going back to you, and even going back to the article that you wrote in Vanity Fair about Mitt Romney, what's the most, I guess, either egregious or questionable use of tax havens that jumps out at you?
Okay, I'll get back to that in a second. I just want to say about Leslie's point about this this complicated thing about shifting intangible assets. There is a really great film that's just come out called We're Not Broke, and if anybody wants to find out more about it, it's really worth watching, really kind of engaging film that explains how corporations do this internationally and locally. Anyway, getting back to Mitt Romney, I think, you know, the thing that was kind of most shocking to me, as I said, was the pattern. It's a kind of drip of things. You know, I start the article by, you know, somebody I spoke to who worked for Romney back in the 1970s when he was at Bain & Co. She was tasked with finding out, commercially sensitive information. I mean, they were a consultancy, and that was their job to do that. But he was her manager, and he suggested that she kind of pretend to be someone else, pretend to be somebody who's kind of falsify her story of who exactly she was and what she was doing in order to get the information. I mean, that's just sort of one little anecdote. You know, there's another thing that I think made a lot of got a lot of interest was that there's this company that called Sankaty, which popped up on his 2010 tax return, which he released under pressure during the Republican primaries. He had previously said he's not going to release his tax return. This company had not been disclosed on earlier disclosure forms that he'd produced. It appears, if you look at it on the tax return, it looks like there could be not much in there. There's not a lot of money knocking around in that company. But it seems that Mitt Romney has treated his company very, very carefully. He transferred it to his wife's blind trust the day before he was inaugurated as governor of Massachusetts. And that apparently allowed him to get away with not disclosing it. The president of that company is his long-standing lawyer who looks after his blind trust, Bradford Malt, and it's incorporated in Bermuda, and it may be, and again, we don't have the information, there are so many questions that have not been answered, this is one of them, that there is substantial value in that company that's not being disclosed. It could be the case, and that is something that they haven't yet responded to, as far as I'm aware. That is something they've been asked about, the Romney campaign, but they haven't responded to. And it's kind of a drip of things like this, questions, things that aren't disclosed, are questions that aren't being answered, that I think really kind of makes up the meat of my article, really.
Well, you also write, and there are accounts in a number of different places, including in the Cayman Islands, and you write that you can be jailed if you ask about a tax haven in the Cayman Islands. Did I read that right?
You did. It's called the Confidential Relationships Protection Law in the Cayman Islands. That is a law that's been on the books for a long time, and it was revised, I think, in 2009. But essentially, you can go to jail for revealing information, but also for asking for it. I mean, I spoke to an insolvency practitioner down there in the Cayman Islands who was just saying, you know, this law ought to be scrapped. It ties my hands. I'm trying to find out information on people who've, you know, been committing fraud and stuff. And it, you know, just makes it much more difficult. I mean, that law is, you know, the Cayman Islands has created kind of gateways through that law so that if you have a particular kind of request, you can get information if you go through the right authorities. But this is a bureaucratic and difficult procedure. And, you know, essentially it kind of has a chilling effect on people in the jurisdiction. And there are many other things in the Cayman Islands and elsewhere that also kind of serve as a real deterrent against people giving anything away.
Well, is that also a difference between the Caymans and Delaware, Leslie? Are you able to get access to information about corporations that are headquartered in Delaware?
No, but the answer is that that's the whole point of it's one of the points of incorporating in Delaware, and that's one of the frustration that law enforcement officials have had with the state of Delaware and with other states that get involved in allowing shell corporations to be created there. One of the people, one of the big groups who are supporting Senator Levin's efforts, which have been so far, you know, gone nowhere to get more information on beneficial ownership, has been the Justice Department, has been any number of law enforcement agencies, including there's a letter that was just written by about 41 different human rights groups and law enforcement groups to every member of Congress supporting Senator Levin's legislation. But on the other hand, you have powerful groups like the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Secretaries of State, and the National Association of Secretaries of State, you know, have relationships with politicians all around the country, you know, opposing the legislation. So, you know, the level of secrecy that you have, it's very, very difficult to get information about who's doing business in the state of Delaware. You know, the reports that we've gotten, you know, when you look at, you know, aside from the legitimate corporations. But you look at people like Jack Abramoff. Jack Abramoff, the jailed lobbyist, he set up his corporations in Delaware. Victor Boot, the arms merchant. He's known as the Merchant of Death. He was just sentenced to 25 years in prison on terrorism charges. You know, he was registering some of his operations in the state of Delaware. Well, Jack Abramoff and Victor Boot and people like that were attracted to the state of Delaware specifically because it provided the kind of secrecy that shell corporations offer. No question, you register, no questions asked, no questions about who actually is behind the money that's coming into these corporations. There's a group in Eastern Europe, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, that has identified a number of, in some ways, very colorful bad guys who've circulated their money through Delaware. And the whole point is because of that, because there are no questions asked.
You also write, Leslie, that other states, Wyoming, you mentioned several other states are beginning to mirror what Delaware has been doing.
Well, some of this is actually good business. When you look at Delaware and you look at how much money comes into the state of Delaware, you know, $860 million a year is collected from all the different fees and franchise taxes for all these corporations. That's a quarter of the state budget. Not only is it a quarter of the state budget, but if you look at the whole legal community that's supported by the, by the Chancery Court and business, and you look at the whole sort of economic entity of this legitimate and shady in Delaware, it's a big economic engine in the state of Delaware. So other states, Nevada and Wyoming are two prime examples, are also known, and they've been identified by the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is a subset of Treasury, as being particularly appealing for the establishment of shell corporations. And these states are doing it for the same reason as Delaware, that it generates revenue for the state. But of course, a FinCEN, which is the shortened term for financial crimes enforcement, says that of the states that are doing this, Delaware really is the one that stands out because the amount of secrecy that allows people to operate is far greater than in the other well-known shell corporation states of Nevada, Wyoming, and to some extent, Oregon.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking about tax havens in the U.S. and around the world. Leslie Wayne, a contributing business reporter for the New York Times, wrote a recent article titled How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. Nicholas Jackson, also with us as well. He wrote a Vanity Fair article about Mitt Romney and tax havens titled Where the Money Is. Also wrote a book called Treasure Islands. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
On the next Fresh Air, Kenneth Lonergan talks about writing and directing the film Margaret, which was described in The New Yorker as nothing short of a masterpiece. It was completed in 2006, but because of lawsuits, it didn't open until last year and was shown in few theaters. Now it's out on DVD. Lonergan also made You Can Count on Me. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. When Reggie Shaw was 19, he killed two men because he was texting while driving. Now he's helped pass one of the toughest anti-texting and driving laws in the country. His is a cautionary tale. Also, actress Anna Gunn of AMC's Breaking Bad. What will happen in the final season? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We are talking about domestic and foreign tax havens with our guests Nicholas Jackson and Leslie Wayne, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Nick, let me go back to the article that you wrote in Vanity Fair, and this is about Romney's IRA. According to what you write, it's worth as much as $100 million. Now, I think anyone who has an IRA knows that you can only put about $2,000 a year, a max of $2,000 a year, into that IRA. How did his become $100 million?
Well, I think the kind of IRA that he most likely had at that time when he was setting it up back in Bain Capital was had a bigger contribution limit. I think it was $30,000. There was a very good report in the Wall Street Journal about all of this. But essentially, so you have these very small contribution limits, $30,000-ish per year, and then you end up with an IRA with perhaps up to $102 million. In it, and that had a lot of tax experts scratching their head. How do you do that? And really, we don't have a definitive answer as to how he did it. And we've got, lots of people have asked him, and the campaign has not given a definitive answer, which, as with many, many other things. But essentially, what seems to have happened is that Bain Capital, we know that Bain Capital did this. We don't know for sure that Romney did this, but Bain Capital gave its employees a particular kind of Wall Street juiced up way to put your profit shares into your IRA and put them in at a very, very low valuation. So what you do at the beginning is you squash the valuations down. You can fiddle with the valuation, squash them down to a very low level, insert them into the IRA, and once they're inside, sheltered from tax, that's when they can really grow fast. And you kind of use Wall Street a particular sort of financial acrobatics to find ways to do that. And it's all about how you value the shares. In this case, it appears it was done by splitting the shares into two and assigning the values, how much these things are worth in very clever and tricky ways. And you put one set of shares that's very risky and can explode in value if things go well, put those ones inside and you leave the much more pedestrian shares outside. A kind of slightly complicated way of doing it.
Sure.
So this is another example of the kind of financial acrobatics. And tax lawyers who looked at the way that Bain Capital did this, and it seemed likely that Romney did this, but we don't know for sure, they said that the valuations that seem to have been used in this case were really kind of pushing the envelope. We're getting back to this issue of grey areas. If the IRS decided to take a look at this, who knows what they would say, but perhaps they would take a very dim view of pushing the valuations quite so aggressively.
But Nick, do you need a tax haven to do that, or can you do that onshore?
No, that particular thing was not a tax haven issue. But there is another tax haven issue related to his IRA. One of the things that Romney's campaign has repeatedly says is that he pays, even though he uses tax havens, his investments go through tax havens, he pays exactly the same taxes as he would if he invested in the United States. Again, that's probably not quite true. Again, we don't know for sure because they won't tell us. But it seems that there is a way. If you're investing in business in the United States and debt finance business such as private equity, you will tend to get hit with taxes. But if you invest through a Cayman Islands entity, you can, if you're a tax exempt, and Mitt Romney's IRA falls into that category, if you're a tax exempt, you can, by investing through the Cayman Islands, avoid a tax called the unrelated business income tax, you can kind of skip around that. So it seems likely that he was able to reduce his tax bill by going through the Cayman Islands. Again, we don't have confirmation.
Leslie, anything you want to add to that? I do want to get to our callers.
I was just going to add one sort of Mitt Romney and Delaware connection, which relates to the campaign, is that one of a Bain executive, a former Bain executive, anonymously gave $1 million to the Restore Our Future Super PAC that supports Mitt Romney through using a Delaware shell company. Ultimately, this came out in some you know, blogs, political blogs, and the person was identified. But there's an example of how using a shell corporation was seen, a Delaware shell corporation was seen as a vehicle for getting an anonymous $1 million donation into the pro-Romney super PAC. Now, of course, the Romney campaign had nothing to do with this, but it was a Bain executive, and it kind of reflects, you know, as Nicholas is talking about the relationship between Bain and the use of the Cayman Islands, it reflects a certain mentality and familiarity with the use of tax havens, whether it's onshore, offshore, by Bain.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation. That's a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. And we have Dan joining us from Winmore. Dan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. One of your guests had mentioned that San Cati does not have much assets in it. But as I understand it, Mitt Romney can use the benefits from it. It sounds like if money goes in, money can come out. I also understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that foreign corporations or people can use offshore accounts to bring money onshore. Is this a possible way, for foreigners, corporations or individuals, to be funneling money to Romney to use in the campaign? I also understand that he was in London collecting a whole lot of money for his campaign. I thought this was prohibited under federal law.
Well, Dan, let me toss that first to Nick, and I'd like to see what Leslie has to say as well. Nick, can you answer that?
Well, this gets into a complex area. I'm a little bit hesitant about answering the specific question. I mean, foreign money coming into the campaign, there are restrictions on that. There are laws against that and specific mechanisms of how you might get around the law. I don't think I'd want to get into that because I'm not familiar enough with it, I'm afraid.
No, fair enough. Leslie, anything you want to say?
To the point of the seeking donations overseas, the election laws in the United States are that only U.S. citizens or green card holders can donate money to political campaigns on the federal level. Candidates have gone to Europe to campaign and to fundraise in Europe. Mitt Romney has, and before that, President Obama had done that during the campaign. But the people that they're soliciting money from, and I think even John McCain did, but don't hold me to that. But the people that they're soliciting money from in London are U.S. citizens. Foreign citizens cannot donate to the campaign. So it's U.S. citizens, expats living overseas, and there are Republican and Democratic, political, sort of support groups in most of the countries overseas.
Dan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well 1-888-477-9499. Nick, are you comfortable that the Obama reelection campaign has used your story in the Associated Press, other reports as well, to use that as part of their campaign against Mitt Romney?
Well, I was rather taken aback, I must say, at the kind of splash that it's made. I mean, my article has plenty of new stuff in it, but it has, uses quite a lot of stuff that's been out there already. I think one of the things that's happened is that journalists, obviously journalists have been all over Mitt Romney's finances for a long time, but the stories that have come out have been kind of generally, individual stories about individual issues, and each issue, each story that comes out, makes a little bit of a splash and then kind of disappears again. I think what my story did was really try to establish a pattern and alter this question, asking about the grey areas and tying it up with new stuff such as San Cati and various other bits and pieces. I think it kind of made a package that was much more powerful than the sum of its parts. And I think that's really where the success has come. And I was really quite surprised that it has had quite as much attention as it got. I mean, I'm, delighted to get the exposure for my writing. The fact that the Obama campaign has used it well, I don't have any complaints about that at all. It's you don't mind them I guess.
I mean, you don't mind them using it in a partisan way?
Well, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm obviously not a U.S. voter, so I can't really, I haven't got much to say about, you know, about what U.S. politicians can and can't do with my stuff. But, you know, I also have my problems with the Obama campaign, with Obama. You know, I think he's done some good things. Looking from the outside, I think that he's also been far too close to Wall Street for my liking. That's one of the big gripes I have against Obama. So I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm a big fan of Obama or anything like that. But, you know, I'm very pleased to see these issues getting an airing. That's what really, I'm very pleased about that. The issue of tax havens has flown below the radar for so long in the United States, but in countries around the world. And now I think it's beginning to kind of bubble up just how important this offshore system is and how central it is to the whole global economy, and that I'm absolutely delighted about. And you know, if the Obama campaign is sort of bringing these issues up, then I believe that that's a good thing at the end of the day.
Do you second that, Leslie?
What's very interesting is that when President Obama was a senator, he was one of the co-sponsors of the legislation that Senator Levin has introduced. So he's been on the side of trying to clamp down on the offshore secrecy and on the offshore tax havens. Unfortunately, this is legislation that has been introduced three times and has gone pretty much nowhere. And when he was campaigning, that's when he was campaigning for president, that was when he called out the Caymans, and especially this, you know, Ugland House with the whatever it was, 120,000 or whatever number of corporations are there. So on this particular issue, he has spoken out. But again, you know, politics are politics and power are power, and there's money in politics in Washington, and it's hard to get any kind of movement to begin to clamp down on some of this, some of this domestically.
And I don't want to have you speculate, but, you know, Vice President Joe Biden, longtime senator from Delaware, I don't know if that has any influence or not within the Obama administration.
Well, actually, the more interesting player in this is Senator Carper. When I was in Delaware interviewing the people, I asked about Biden and also his son, who is, I believe, Attorney General there.
Yes.
And apparently, the Bidens have stood on the sidelines on this issue. They haven't been, opposing it, and they haven't been supporting it. But the interesting person is Senator Carper, because Senator Carper has been a key player. He has not taken a formal position on the beneficial ownership, but he continually expresses concerns about it. And he is in line, if the Democrats hold on to the Senate, he's in line to be the chairman of the committee that would be considering this legislation. And from the people who are on the the pro-legislation side, they've said that basically, Levin has been hitting a brick wall because of Senator Carper. That Senator Carper is well liked, well respected, and he's not budging on this at all. He's not standing up and opposing on it, but he's not letting it happen.
Let me quote something from Richard Ron. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Wrote it a couple of months ago. He's from the Cato Institute, and this is about tax havens. And he says the so-called tax havens are, for the most part, no more than way stations to temporarily collect savings from around the world until they are invested in productive projects such as building a new shopping center or semiconductor plant in the United States. This enables a better allocation of world capital, leading to higher, not lower, global growth rates. And when I read that, Nicholas, I wanted to know what you make of that. I'd be curious about your response.
Yeah, I mean, I've clashed with Richard Rahn. He is one of the most vocal supporters of tax havens and the Cayman Islands. He's a former top Cayman Islands official as well. Now, his argument, basically, he's saying this is all about productive investment. What happens, tax havens do serve as channels for foreign money to come into the United States, foreign savings, that's for sure. Foreign investors who come in, again, can avoid getting tangled up with the U.S. tax system if they invest via the Cayman Islands. One point to make that first of all about that is that a lot of this money is illicit. Now, Leslie's been talking about the illicit possibilities offered by states such as Delaware, but the United States has also deliberately created a kind of federal level system of financial secrecy as well. And so there is this problem of illicit money, a huge amount of illicit money coming into the United States, dirty money from all around the world, particularly Latin America, that is tax evading money and criminal money and so on. So that is one problem. But the other problem is Richard Rahn talks about this is coming into productive investment. Mm. Predominantly this money that is coming into the United States as a result of its tax haven status and as a result of using these kind of foreign feeder havens is that this is money for Wall Street. This is puffing up Wall Street. If you're worried about the power of the financial sector, as I and many other people are, then you need to worry about tax havens. You need to worry about the Cayman Islands. You need to worry about all these other places. Because if you look at who are the biggest users of tax havens around the world, look at corporations and their subsidiaries. The biggest user of tax havens in every case is banks. Look at there's a GAO, Government Accountability Office report that looked at this question, and the biggest users are, you know, corporations like Citigroup. It's not the kind of traditional view. Tax havens fundamentally are about the financial sector. They're about financialized business and private equity, which is, Mitt Romney is a private equity king. That is very much part of the picture. Private equity involves very much kind of financial engineering of corporations, which many would regard as a very sort of negative thing. It is not productive investment. You know, it does involve elements of productive investment for sure, but the financial aspect of it, which is what sets private equity apart, tends to have very unproductive effects. A lot of studies have shown that.
Well,
so what's happening with tax havens, you're getting a big kind of puffing up of Wall Street in the financial sector and the kind of financialization of corporations, and that is incredibly dangerous in the long term for the United States.
Well, Leslie, I'm going to give you the final word. 30 seconds. Go ahead.
World Bank has become very critical of the United States, and if you look at a lot of the shady money that's coming in from all over the world, aside from all the Wall Street money, a lot of shady money coming in the United States through the mechanisms that we talked about, and people are taking notice.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for taking a complicated issue and making it much more understandable. Leslie Wayne, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And she's a contributing business reporter for the New York Times, wrote an article, How Delaware Thrives as a Corporate Tax Haven. Nicholas Shexon, thank you very much as well.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And you can read his Vanity Fair article, Where the Money Lives. It's in the August edition. Also wrote a book called Treasure Islands about tax havens. Looks like our phones are not working. So if you tried to call into the program, we apologize. It looks like we have some technical problems here. But you can go to our website. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and send us an email. Join us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.